These days in Israel, Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzma'ut are filled with emotion. All the time that I was in Israel, so there were no cell phones, people didn't write emails, people didn't even make phone calls because you had to use a pay phone. The only letter I ever wrote to my parents, Shana Aleph, was this time. Right, I wrote my girlfriend a lot of times. I wrote my parents once, because it was just such an emotional day. You go from Har Herzl, from the sadness of so many soldiers who made the ultimate sacrifice, to the celebration of Yom HaAtzma'ut. And the truth is, that's what life is all about. You will have days in your life where in the morning you'll have a bris, in the afternoon you'll have a funeral, and at night you'll have a wedding. That's really what happens. Life is filled with these ups and downs, right? We have Tanis Esther right before Purim. The idea for me, what I felt when I was there, not just what I mentioned to you before, that you look at the tombstones and you see that these guys are your age, it's that this appreciation, that before we give appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we first appreciate the people. The same way when you're at a meal, you say thank you to your mother or to the hostess, whoever made the food, and then we bench. So we appreciate all the people that made what we're doing possible. It was a very, very emotional day. I think it was probably then that I really started having Zionist feelings, which led to my eventual Aliyah. Now, 20-some years ago, my wife and I, we took our family, we left Israel, we went back to America for a couple of years for my wife's job, and I ended up teaching at a girls' school in New Jersey. And in that school, the principal herself, she was more like Haredi-ish, and so were most of the teachers. Teachers were from Lakewood, and we had this initial meeting. She hired me from Israel. She saw me once teach, but we were getting together now. First time I flew in, day before school started, I informed her I wasn't going to wear a suit. Okay. Then we had a discussion, and I said to her, what is your feelings about Medina Yisrael? What's the hashkafa of the school about Medina Yisrael, in regard to Medina Yisrael? And she said to me, oh, we're not really so in favor of the government. And I said, I didn't ask you who the prime minister is and if you would have voted for the prime minister. I'm not talking about any particular government. I said, I want to know, what's your view about, after almost 2,000 years of Gullus, Am Yisrael has come back to Eretz Yisrael and set up an independent government in Eretz Yisrael. What is the school's hashkafa in regard to that? And then she said, oh, I didn't really give it much thought. I was really disappointed. Some people look and they say this particular government or that particular government, and they judge whether or not I should, you know, look at the glass being half empty, what they're not doing, half full, what they are doing. It's not about what the government's doing, it's what about a Kadosh Baruch Hu has done. That's what this day is all about. What has God done? Imagine you get a job working for Nefesh B'Nefesh. Right? I have a good friend, my community, that's what he does. Imagine you working for Nefesh B'Nefesh, and your goal is to bring 10% of American Jews to Eretz Yisrael. So, depending on whether 4 to 5 million Jews are there, 400 to 500,000 Jews. We want to bring hundreds of thousands of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. Have them make Aliyah. How successful do you think you're going to be? Most people live in the country of their birth their whole lives. They take temporary vacations abroad, of course, but they live in the country of their birth their whole life. And the reasons are, you know, pretty straightforward. It's difficult to move to another country. The difficulties of absorption, learning a new language, trying to earn a livelihood in a foreign country. It's true. But what's interesting is this is true for millions of Jews today who are too comfortable or lazy or scared to make aliyah to an existing country that is economically stable, maybe more so than the countries that you come from. And this is true for frum Jews. This is true for frum Jews who spend extra money on a hiddur mitzvah, you know, to have a beautiful esrog, to have a beautiful kiddush cup. And yet, the Sifri, the Midrash Halacha, says, and Rashi and Ramban both quote in their commentary on Chumash, that all the mitzvahs that you do in Chutz Laretz, it's minor league stats. You know, you're getting ready for when you make it to the big leagues. So wouldn't you think that from Jews would care and really want to be where mitzvahs count? You know, to paraphrase Field of Dreams, although we built it, they still don't come. Now, what's truly amazing is the early pioneers. They were well established in their countries of origin, their countries of birth and chutz la'aretz. They were fluent in their languages and they were comfortable in their culture. And yet, hundreds of thousands of Jews left all that. Not for a country, an existing country with the barren, with stable economy, no, but to a barren land full of swamps and malaria. They went down in their standard of living and gave their all to establish a country for Am Yisrael. Another point, most countries come into being when the indigenous population that's living there throws off foreign rule. Here, we have something totally different. We have Jews coming from over 100 different countries, speaking over 80 different languages. They came back to Eretz Israel, seemingly nothing in common. But they returned to their homeland that they had been exiled from nearly 2,000 years earlier to start a country of their own. There is no historic precedent for anything like this. Throw in the fact that the majority of these people did not feel any halakhic obligation to do it. Is it not clear that God is running the show? Is it not clear that God is a Zionist? Now what happens is that people feel confusion. People feel confusion. And the reason is because we're too close to the situation. We're too close to the miracle. We don't get it. You know, you look in the Gemara and you see Hanukkah. Only years later did they celebrate Hanukkah. We see, we're learning Megillah now. Esther had to beg the Chachamim, Kifuni Lidor, make Purim into a Chag. It wasn't a davar, you know, pashut. It wasn't obvious this was going to happen. We see that even after Esther and Mordechai save, Am Yisrael Mordechai is only accepted by Rov Echav, because everyone likes what's going on. And there's always critics. You're too close to the situation. People don't get it. Now, brief history. How did this happen? Secular Zionism. Right? Yoni spoke the other day in our Herzl about the beginning of secular Zionism. Secular Zionism started as a response to anti-Semitism in Europe. Reform Jewry wasn't the answer. Reform Judaism wasn't the answer. We needed a nation of our own. One of the early Zionist leaders, Moshe Hess, once said, "The Goyim hate our peculiar faith less than our peculiar noses. It's not about if we keep Shabbos on Saturday or Sunday. They don't like us. They don't like Jews. And therefore, we need to have a homeland of our own." This Zionism was political. It was secular. It was built on courage, not on religion, not on spirituality, not on mysticism. We need a safe haven. And in this regard, with all the anti-Semitism that was rampant in Europe, many of these Zionist rabbis agreed wholeheartedly. This is what it's all about. We need a safe haven for Jews. But Rav Kook took it to another level. We see in Yechezkel that Golus is a Chilul Hashem. Mesilat Pesukim, coming back to Eretz Yisrael is a Kiddush Hashem. And Rav Kook looked at this Zionism, at this return to Eretz Yisrael, as something positive. The fact that they were secular means that they just weren't yet holy. Our job was to sanctify the agriculture, sanctify the arts. He felt that general culture was like the four-cornered garment. Our job was to put tzitzis on it. This only can be accomplished where the culture was essentially Jewish, can only be accomplished in Eretz Yisrael. Now, religious Zionists feel being back in Eretz Yisrael, this is unbelievable. There are people, unfortunately, living here and elsewhere that feel that this is galus like any other galus. Right? There's galus in Europe, there's galus in Israel. But religious Zionists say, how could this kibbutz galiot be galus like any other galus? In 1882, before the first Aliyah, there were 24,000 Jews living in Israel. When Ezra and Nehemiah came back to build up Beit Sheni, only 42,000 Jews went with them. In the first 3 years after the state was formed, the country doubled in size. 700,000 people came in the first 3 years, more than doubled in size. In one glorious day in 1991, Operation Solomon, in 36 hours, 14,000 Ethiopian Jews were brought to Eretz Yisrael. Right now in Israel, okay, let's say, when the country started, there were a little bit more than 600,000 Jews living in Israel. There's now more than 10 times that number. There's 6.5 million Jews living in Israel. To say that this is a galus like any other galus, I find this very, very difficult. And therefore, the religious Zionist view is that we have a clear, and I'm emphasizing, opportunity. It's not a given, but an opportunity for this to be the start of the eventual Geula. Now, there's some that go further and say it's inevitable. We started the clock ticking. The Geula will come. Okay? What do they quote? They quote the Ramban in Chumash, who talks about two different totokachas. We have in Vayikra and Devarim. It's referring to after Beis Rishon, Beis Sheni. We've come back a third time. There will not be another Galus. We know that Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi of Israel, was in America during World War II. Rav Kook was the first chief rabbi of the land of Israel was Palestine. Rav Herzog was the first chief rabbi when the state was actually formed. And here it was, World War II, and we have the Nazis now coming up through North Africa on their way to Eretz Israel, and he's trying to get back to Israel as soon as possible. And people say to him, why do you want to go back there? It's going to be a bloodbath. And he said, no, there's not going to be a third Korban. It was so clear, there won't be a third Korban. And we know the Nazis were stopped in El Aman. They never made it to Eretz Israel. We know Ravina's mentioned to you, Rav Kahaneman, the Panovitcher Rav, ran around buying land in Bnei Brak during this time period. People were saying, why would anyone buy land now? We're going to be destroyed. And for pennies, he bought the land that turned into the Panovitch Yeshiva. What's going to transpire? The Imot HaMashiach. So Rav Gorin was... Our building, it was his yeshiva before we got it. Rav Shlomo Gorin, who was the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he once said, five things are going to happen. One, we're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Two, we're going to set up an independent government, settling the land instead of an independent government here. Three, there's going to be kibbutz galiot. Four, we're going to set up a Sanhedrin. Five, we're going to build a Beit HaMikdash. If so, the state of Israel has already done three out of five. Like I said, can we still possibly just refer to this as a gullus like any other gullus? I mentioned last night, some of you might not have understood because I said it in Hebrew, that if you were to take any Rishon, the Ramban, Rashi, name the Rishon, from a Sephardic country, from an Ashkenazi country, and bring him to today's Israel, not only would it be simple to convince him that it's the Atchalta of the Geula, I think you'd have a very hard time convincing him that this is not the Geula. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Famous Gemara, Tzadi Dalet Amin Aleph, says that Chizkiyahu could have been made Melech HaMashiach, but he failed to sing thanks. Failed to sing Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The war with Sancheirav could have been Mechem Agog Magog. It would have been all over. Chizkiyahu Melech HaMashiach, if he would have said Hallel. It's as simple as that. That's what the Gemara says. Now, what happened? What do we think happened? Chizkiyahu didn't have a Karas HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Miraculously, the Assyrian army is destroyed. He didn't feel a Karas HaTov? So I think either we could say one of two things. He probably did, but he didn't get Am Yisrael to express this gratitude. Or maybe he still had some hesitation because, after all, the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom had already been exiled. There already was a tragedy. So maybe now's not the time to sing. The mistake that he made was to keep a scorecard. That's the same mistake that some people make today. The Chashmonaim, when they fought all those battles, they didn't have casualties. Of course they had casualties. We thank a Kaddish Baruch Hu for the good. We don't just sit there and say, good, but not as good as I expected. Every generation that witnesses a Yeshua, that witnesses a salvation, has the same exact opportunity as Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And we witnessed an amazing Yeshua. The rabbi that was my rabbi when I was growing up in West Hempstead, Rabbi Gold, he once said this beautiful idea in the name of Rav Avram Palm. Rav Avram Palm, it's Rosh Hashiva of Tor Vadas. And here's this idea. We know that in Parashat Ekev, it says that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to treat us the way a father treats his son. So what does that mean? It means that sometimes he has to punish us. Let's say you have a little kid, right? You're walking with your little kid. He doesn't hold your hand. And he starts to go into the street. And you grab him and you go, don't run in the street. You get hit by a car and you smack him on the hand. And he starts to cry. And then what do? Then you give him a big hug. Give him a big hug because you don't want to hit him. You want to teach him. Punishments are supposed to be educational. And then you give him this big hug that he should realize it's done out of love. Instead of Avram Palm, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the exact same thing with Am Yisrael in history. You see it. Every single time he punishes us, there's an outpouring of love. Immediately afterwards. And he gave four examples. Example number one, the one we just started with. You have the northern kingdom, 10 tribes of Israel. The majority of Israel, they're sent into Gullus. According to one opinion of the Gemara, never to be heard from again. And then there's this outpouring of love. Where Kadosh Baruch Hu saves Chizkiyahu and Malchus Yehuda miraculously. And as we said just moments ago, that could have been the time period for Mashiach. It didn't happen. But there was potential then. Palm went on to case number two. Chorban Bayis Sheni. Chorban Bayis Sheni. Beis Hamikdash destroyed. Am Yisrael sent off to Gullus, this time not just to Babel in Egypt, all over the place. But a short while after, Bar Kokhba leads a rebellion. Bar Kokhba leads a rebellion against the mighty Roman Empire, and he is successful. And for 2.5 years, Bar Kokhba is Melech in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva thought he was Mashiach. And again, it didn't work out, but the potential was there. The outpouring of love by HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there. Third example of Rav Palm, expulsion from Spain. Jews have been living in Spain for centuries. Golden age of Spain. Jews were there. They were involved in society. They had wealth. They had Torah knowledge. Everything was going great. And they were expelled from Spain. And a short time afterwards, you had a bunch of Jews that all congregated in one holy city in Israel in Sfat. You had Rabbi Yosef Cairo, and you had the Arizal, and you had like the who's who of Mekubalim, Torah Tanistar and Torah Tanigla. They were all there. And they felt Mashiach was coming. Rav Yaakov Beirav, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, he reinstituted smicha because Maranos were coming in. And they said, we want to get punished now because we don't want to suffer in Olam Haba. They reinstituted smicha. You had the Ari talking about how Mashiach was coming. The Licha Dodi. Stanzas that we sang from Licha Dodi last night were because they're all about Mashiach. It's not about Shabbos. All about Mashiach. It's all about Mashiach. And they felt it. They wrote it then. Again, it didn't happen. We don't know why. But the opportunity was there. And the fourth example the Rav Palm gave was the Holocaust. The worst punishment the Jewish people ever suffered. And then you had the greatest outpouring of love when God formed the state of Israel. This was said by the Rashiv of Torah Vadas. The greatest outpouring of love by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the formation of the state of Israel. I'm going to share with you another approach. This is the approach of my Rebbe, Rabbi Rakefe. He asks this question. Why was this generation, I was talking to Rabbi Ginsburg last night, that generation, the survivors of the Holocaust, and the builders of the state of Israel, it's like one generation. Why were they zoche? Said Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook, Yerushalayim has dual status. On the one hand, it's Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. On the other hand, it's Yerushalayim HaBira. It's the capital city. And Rav Cook brought Sukkim to back this up. The Gemara in Bava Kama says that in the past there were coins that said on one side of the coin, Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, and the other side, David and Shlomo. What did David and Shlomo represent? Gvura, power, might. We weren't allowed to accept converts during the time of David and Shlomo. Everyone wanted to be Jewish. We were so powerful back then. The dual status is seen in Licha Dodi. On the one hand, it's Mikdash Melech, Kedusha, and it's Ir Melucha. It's the king, it's the capital for the kings. There's a scene in the fall of Yerushalayim as well. We have two separate fast days. Tisha B'Av commemorates the fall of Beit HaMikdash. Shivas HaBetamuz, the walls of Yerushalayim are breached. The capital fell on Shivas HaBetamuz. It was a fast for the fall of Gevura. Back to our original question, why was this generation Zoche? For years, we have displayed Kedusha, the no Gvura. We had in the Ashkenazi countries, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam and all the Baalei Tosfot. But then we had the Crusades. And the Sephardi countries, Rabbi Yehuda Levi and the Rambam and the Ramban. And we had the Inquisition and the expulsion from Spain. In Poland, we had the Marshal and the Marshal and we had the Ramah. But we had the Chmielnitsky massacres as well. And we had Gedolim throughout the ages, but we also had blood libels and pogroms and worst of all, the Holocaust. And then Medina Yisrael. We display Gvura along with Kedusha. We have survivors of the Holocaust who come off the boat and are given guns and sent into battle. There are graves in Har Herzl that just say Moshe or Yankala because no one knew who they were. There wasn't time to start filling out forms. Some it just says Ploni. We don't know. They didn't know their name. They didn't speak the same language. They were thrown into battle. This generation was able to blend Kedusha with Gvura. God's gift is great. Sometimes we misuse it. If you receive, let's say, a large check from your grandmother on your high school graduation, a graduation gift, but you went and then blew all the money at a casino, does it mean that you didn't get a gift? Of course you got the gift. We praise the Kaddish Baruch Hu for the gift. We praise the Kaddish Baruch Hu for taking us to Mitzrayim and giving us gold. But why? The gold turned out to be to our detriment. We turned into the Egel Azav. The fact that we misuse it doesn't mean that God wasn't great to us. And I'll go further. Do we cease to celebrate Pesach and Shavuos because we misused the gold and made the Egel Azav? Do we not celebrate Hanukkah because there was an eventual Churban? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the gifts. In the summer, there's a mini chag, Tu B'Av. What happened to Tu B'Av? The Jews who were killed in that battle that I was talking about with Bar Kokhba. After the war was over, they finally found their bodies and they were able to bury them. And it became a joyous day. Why? Not just a joyous day, Tu B'Av. We even add the fourth bracha of Birkat HaMazon. HaTov Be'Metiv. It's because we were able to bury these people. Why? Because their bodies didn't decay. And here it was. We were so depressed after this rebellion against the Romans was put down. People were losing faith. But we saw that God is still with us. There was still some hope. There was still some tikvah. Because God didn't allow the bodies to decay. After the Holocaust, with the unbelievable depression, should we not look at the formation of the State of Israel and say, HaTikvah? Is this not hope? Is this not an understanding that God is still with us? Many people make the mistake and believe the question is, what's our attitude to a secular state? But that's not the question. The question is, what's our attitude to God? What's our attitude to Kadosh Baruch Hu and what he's done for us? There are so many people that see little things and they lose the big picture. I know people who, if they open up a sefer to the right page, they go, wow, that's Bashert. If they come to the bus stop just when the bus is pulling up, that's Min HaShemayim. But if after 2,000 years of Golus, Am Yisrael comes back to Eretz Yisrael, that just happened. God wasn't involved. That just happened. That's a coincidence. That's a coincidence. We should recognize the amazing accomplishments that have occurred here. Turning barren land into land flowing of milk and honey. I'm sure all of you have heard the famous Mark Twain quote when he was here looking in Eretz Yisrael. Taking in all the refugees. Protecting Jews all over the world. Stopping the Chilul Hashem of the wandering persecuted Jew. True? It's not perfect yet. But our attitude, we've always been taught. We say Dayenu. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, we say Dayenu. Ilo tzianu mimitzrayim v'lo asa ben shvatim. Dayenu. Ilo echnisanu l'eret Yisrael v'lo asa lo bana beit mikdash. Dayenu. We're not at the beit mikdash. It's enough of a reason to say thank you. So sometimes we hear, but look at the society. Look at the problems we have. We have problems with the Arabs. We have problems with Chilonim. We have problems with that secular government. Again, I think that there's a problem with looking at the glass half empty. Let me ask you a different question. When in Jewish history have we ever had smooth sailing? Have we ever been devoid of problems? Avraham Avinu is told, Lech Lecha Me'aretz comes to Eretz Yisrael, and what does he meet? A famine. What the heck's going on? He did exactly what God said. Famine. He goes to Egypt, his wife's kidnapped. Twice. Yitzchak has problems with Yishmael. Yaakov's got problems with Esav. Yosef and his brothers have such sibling rivalry that it ends up, that the whole family ends up in Egypt. And we're there for hundreds of years. We finally come out of Egypt. According to the Midrash, most don't even make it out. And then we go into the desert. short little trip that turns into 40 years. Okay? Let's say we're now in the desert, it's year 28. Other than me, there's no one in the room that I think is that old, which means you've lived your entire life in the desert. You were born in the desert, you're just wandering out the desert. Would anyone say, wow, gotta love this geula? This is great. Wow, hope we have more of this. Then we come at the Eretz Yisrael finally. Takes 14 years before Yahushua conquers and settles the land. And not all of it. Not all of it. Some of the places we don't conquer, including Yerushalayim. Had to wait till David HaMelech's time. And because we don't conquer, you read through Sefer Shoftim, all of Sefer Shoftim is problems because we didn't conquer all the land. And we have assimilation, and we have attacks, and we're just fighting all the time. Till we get to the glory years of David and Shlomo, which if anyone's ever opened up, Sefer Shmuel and Malachim know that even the glory years had plenty of problems. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Bayit Sheni, Ezra, Nehemiah, only a small percentage come back. We don't even get our independence in Bayit Sheni until the time of the Hashmonaim, hundreds of years later. And even that is short-lived because the Hashmonaim, the leadership turns into Rishayim and Stukim. And yet with all that, the Rambam talks about how amazing it is that we had independence in Eretz Yisrael for more than 200 years. Even though the leadership weren't tzaddikim. Is it supposed to be different now? The Rambam talks about how it's going to be a natural process. The natural process leading to Mashiach. It's true we have problems. Let's look at the good and work towards bettering the situation. Medina Yisrael isn't even 70 years old yet. It's a very short time in history. Right after we said, Sa'ayom Asa Hashem, Nagila ben Esmachah, we said, An Hashem Atzoshiyana. We recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what you did is fantastic. To be honest, I have more kavana in Hallel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim as I Zeh HaYom Asa Hashem Nagil Ben Eschavo than any other day. Because I saw it, because it's so recent, I see it, it's unbelievable. How do you not see it? Are there problems? Yeah, An Hashem Oshiyana. But let's recognize Hashkachat Hashem in our lives individually, nationally, and say, Hodul Hashem Kitov, Kili Olam Chazdo. Chag Sameach, guys.